Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing our look at the book Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith, written by two Mormon authors, Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery. A book that, when it came out in the 1980s, was very controversial, so much so that the LDS Church leadership actually banned the speakers from talking about the material in this book in church settings. Well, as we look through the book, we can see why the church might be a little concerned about some of the contents of the book, because it does not always paint a picture of Joseph Smith in the faith-promoting way that most books published by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints like to portray him. We are looking at the very beginning. How did Emma Hale come to meet Joseph Smith? And so in the first chapter, the authors tackle this subject. Last week, we were talking about how this relative of Emma, a man by the name of William Hale, had approached Emma's father, Isaac Hale, with what the authors describe as a peculiar story. Listen carefully to the wording here, because I think this wording actually portrays a picture of Joseph Smith that maybe most Latter-day Saints are completely unaware. The authors go on to talk about this woman claiming to have powers that enabled her to see underground, and had told William Hale that great treasures were concealed in a hill just northeast of Isaac's house. It talks about a man by the name of Oliver Harper who had gone in as a partner with William Hale, but Oliver Harper ends up being murdered. Actually, he was murdered by a man by the name of Jason Treadwell, who had mistaken him for another man that he wanted to take revenge on. So it's an interesting story in and of itself. But this now takes us to introduce a man by the name of Josiah Stoll. And this is found at the bottom of page 7.
Yeah, Josiah Stoll lived across the river in South Bainbridge, New York. He was one of the many men of good reputation and adequate means who convinced himself that treasure did indeed lie hidden beneath the soil. Stoll became William Hale's new partner. Certain that the early Spanish explorers had discovered a silver mine and covered it with earth to hide it, Josiah worked on the site with William Hale, but realized that progress would be faster if they hired men to help. For some time, Stoll had known a farmer by the name of Smith who lived farther north in New York, and he believed that one of Smith's sons had extraordinary powers.
Now, this is where Joseph Smith Sr., Joseph Smith's father, is introduced. He is the Smith who lived farther north in New York, and Josiah Stoll believed that one of Smith's sons had extraordinary powers. Notice again the language, folks. There is a supernatural element that is involved here. So when you hear Mormon apologists make it sound like there is nothing out of the ordinary, don't believe it. Listen carefully to what these authors are saying, because they understand very clearly what's going on here.
It goes on and says, the men in that family were at least 6 feet tall, strong, and with reputations as hard workers. The combination seemed ideal to William Hale and Josiah Stoll. Because Elizabeth Hale's tavern was close to the work site.
And we might mention this word tavern might be confusing. Elizabeth Hale had opened their home to boarders. Mm-hmm. And so they would bring in, for extra cash, they would bring in people who would rent out rooms in the house. Now, when it uses the word tavern, it gives you the impression it was like a bar. I don't know if it was really like that. They probably did sell some type of alcoholic beverages.
Well, we know they sold beer there. So Josiah Stoll made arrangements with her to board some men and left for northern New York to hire them. Each previous fall, he had traveled to the Smith home to buy their wheat. This year, a letter preceded his visit, outlining the digging operation and offering employment to the Smith men. When Stoll returned to Harmony after his buying trip to upstate New York, a new group of boarders came with him and entered the Hale House in November 1825. One tall, fair, blue-eyed man named Joseph Smith stood among them. These were the money diggers.
These were the money diggers. And that's the controversial phrase. Now, Joseph Smith does not deny that he was a money digger. In fact, if you were to look at the book, Teachings of the Prophet Joseph Smith, on page 120, it says on the page previous, it says a subheading, "The Prophet's Answer to Sundry Questions. I answered the questions which were frequently asked me." Question number 10 is, was not Joseph Smith a money digger? Yes, but it was never a very profitable job for him, as he only got $14 a month for it. Now, this phrase, money digger, Smith admits to being one of them. But yet, Mormon apologists would give you the impression that this was not an extraordinary job at all. It was certainly an ordinary job. What does the Foundation for Apologetics Information and Research say? FAIR.
Yeah, the FAIR wiki page on Joseph Smith money digging. This is the criticism they list at the beginning of their article on the web. It says, critics insist that Joseph Smith's engagement in money digging or looking for buried treasure shows itself as a blot on his character. Furthermore, critics argue that Joseph's initial religious experiences were related to treasure seeking, and only later did he retrofit a religious explanation. It goes into the summary conclusion, and this is what they write. Joseph and his family were involved in seeking for treasure. This was a common and accepted practice in their culture, though the Smiths do not seem to have been involved to the extent claimed by some of the exaggerated attacks upon them by former neighbors. The earliest documents strongly suggest, however, that Joseph and those close to him always understood Moroni as an angelic messenger with a divine role.
It gives the impression that to be a money digger at that time is certainly nothing bad. They give you the impression that being a money digger was almost the same as someone who was digging a mine. Mm-hmm. And remember, there was a silver mine involved in this story. Josiah Stoll believed that there was an old Spanish silver mine and he was looking for it. But notice again the wording that describes Joseph Smith. This is not ordinary, and to give the impression, as FAIR does, that this term had no negative connotations but was quite normal is really misleading. Let me bring your attention to a sermon given by Brigham Young in a special conference held in the Tabernacle in the Great Salt Lake City, August 29, 1852. This is only 22 years after the Mormon Church is founded, and this is what he was saying. He said, when the elders first commenced preaching Mormonism 20 years ago, and he's simply rounding off the date, they would take the Bible and prove every item of doctrine to the people beyond doubt and controversy. What did the priests say to you? Can you recollect what they said in the different states where this gospel was first preached? What arguments were used against your position and the doctrines you believe? Yes, the priest would halloo from the pulpit, "Joe Smith, old Joe Smith." That was their argument to begin with. Imposter, imposter. He is deluding the people. He is deluding the people. Old Joe Smith, the money digger. He is a necromancer. He is a fortune teller. A money digger, old Joe Smith. If that was a normal occupation, why is he throwing the title money digger in there? Because it wasn't a normal occupation. Smith's involvement with money digging involved supernatural abilities that people thought he had to find things of value in the ground. This is not to be equated with someone that's merely looking for an abandoned mine. It's not that at all.
Well, and I think that can be shown in the LDS scriptures, the standard works. Joseph Smith History, chapter 1, verse 56 says, halfway through it, talking about Josiah Stoll in 1825, the man who we were talking about earlier, had heard something of a silver mine having been opened by the Spaniards in Harmony, Susquehanna County, state of Pennsylvania, and had previous to my hiring to him been digging in order if possible to discover the mine. After I went to live with him, he took me with the rest of his hands to dig for the silver mine, at which I continued to work for nearly a month without success in our undertaking. And finally, I prevailed with the old gentleman to cease digging after it. Notice this next sentence, though. Hence arose the very prevalent story of my having been a money digger. This was written in 1839 and it was published in 1842. This story had followed Joseph Smith, and here he's denying that anything having to do with money digging took place with him except for having done the silver mine. But as we look at the evidence, it's very clear that there was much more than just a silver mine involved.
Oh, absolutely. And when you also consider that Joseph Smith was arrested for being a glass looker, and he went to trial, this was on March 20th, 1826. There was a bill by Mr. Neely. Now, this was found later on by Wes Walters, and for years the Mormon Church kept kind of goading people. Oh, prove that he was a glass lurker. Go ahead. Well, finally they found proof that he was. He was arrested for that. If this was a common occupation, why is he being arrested for doing this? We're going to talk about this tomorrow. Isaac Hale, Joseph Smith's eventual father-in-law, made a sworn affidavit published in their county newspaper in 1834 that mentions in passing that Smith stated to me that he had given up what he called glass looking and that he expected to work hard for a living and was willing to do so. Why is that important? The reason he's going to give it up, we get the impression, is that he's trying to impress his future father-in-law. Because remember, Isaac Hale did not want his daughter marrying Joseph Smith because he was involved in this occupation of being a money digger or a glass looker. This was not the same as merely looking for an abandoned mine.
And not a respectable career
at all. It was not a respectable occupation, and that's why Isaac Hale had a problem with Joseph Smith. So when Mormon apologists like those at Fair try to give the impression that this is nothing more than just looking for, you know, buried coins in the ground like someone with a metal detector on a beach, there is no comparison here. Yep. And it's misleading for them to try and make it sound as if that's all it was. It was much more serious than that.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Is there not much of a difference between Mormonism and Christianity? Well, actually, despite what many may think, there is. And when it comes to this sensitive and even highly charged issue that has eternal ramifications, the Christian may not know where to turn. Just trying to understand the Mormons' beliefs can be both confusing and frustrating. That's why Mormonism 101 was written, a book resource by Mormonism Research Ministries' Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson that contrasts vital doctrines such as who is God, what is Scripture, and how a person is able to go to heaven. When the two religions are placed side by side, the differences are many. Mormonism 101 is a tool that will help you better understand the doctrines of your Latter-day Saint friend, family member, or co-worker. And it even has witnessing tips available to help you in future conversations. Published by Baker Books, Mormonism 101 is available at mrm.org or ask for it at your favorite Christian bookstore. As 1 Peter 3 says, always be prepared to give an answer.